It's Open Call with Eric and Chris.
That's me.
It's a show that you'll never want to miss. It's Open Call.
It's Open Call. I'm Chris Grace.
And I'm Eric Michaud.
And it is Thursday, November 21st, 2019.
Where is this year going?
Straight to hell.
Just one week. Positive outlook.
The year is almost over. It's flown by.
It really has, because I've not been in the United States for most of it.
Yeah, and soon we'll be in the thick of all the primary races.
Oh, no.
It'll be fun. I can't imagine it being stressful or anxious producing at all.
No, of course not. Definitely not.
1 week till Thanksgiving.
Uh-huh.
Although you will not be celebrating Thanksgiving.
I mean, I will, but just not here.
It'll just be a Thursday like any other Thursday.
Yeah, I leave the day after tomorrow for London.
Yeah.
Do you want to tell them what I'm doing?
Well, we're what do you call it?
Reopening? Reviving?
It's not reviving.
Reopening, I'd say.
Voldemort and the Teenage Hogwarts musical parody will be in London from November, I want to say 30th, to January 12th.
Mm-hmm.
It's Tuesday through Saturday at 9:15 p.m. at the King's Head Theater, Sundays at 5:15 p.m. Go to kingsheadtheater.co.uk or something like that. I got all the addresses locked down, but
yeah.
Go there and buy some tickets.
Yeah. The show was a real big hit when we were there, right after Edinburgh, and, the theater offered us basically an extension with a little break in the middle.
Yeah. They got, a response. They got response to that show or interest in that show more than they had a show like in a while.
In years, it said, yeah.
So they were very excited. And also, good word of mouth. The end of that run sold very well.
We were completely sold out for the last 2.5 weeks of the run.
So we'll be back. And the way the King's Head works is not unlike some of the theaters like in Chicago. There's like a main show that is at 7 or 8 or something like that. And then they'll also book out a evening slot. And that's what our show is. But you are on the set of the other show.
Right.
So this will look very different this time. It looks to like it's going to have a Winter Wonderland kind of.
I haven't really seen. That's nice.
I should do a picture of it. Oh. It was like, it's like snow covered.
Oh.
It's like a Christmas.
It'll be beautiful.
Yeah.
It'll be a Hogwarts Christmas.
Yeah.
And we have 2 new cast members joining us.
2 new cast members.
I'm now the only American in the show. So, oh God, my accent.
I don't know. This will be fun. Eric is going to be directing it this time. And what a fun challenge for you. I don't know if you have the same number of entrances. I don't think you do.
Oh, my God.
I don't think you
have. Had not considered that.
I don't think you have the 2 doors on the left.
Had not considered that. Yeah. Great.
So there you go. Have fun with that problem.
So you're coming with me, right?
No. you're leaving in 2 days.
I leave the day after
tomorrow. I couldn't possibly book a ticket at this point.
It's crazy. And I just got back.
From the Seychelles Islands.
Right, which is an island off of the coast of Africa. It's right next to Madagascar.
Yeah, you did a one-night performance of Thrones there. I can't say much about who you did it for.
Right, we just know him as the client, but it was someone who's very, 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 very wealthy.
It's not someone famous.
No.
It's not someone that if we said his name, you would know.
Well, I bet he'd be famous where he's from.
I don't even know about that, because the impression I got was that there's a lot of people like him in his... let's say, extended family, which may or may not be a royal family.
May or may not be. we were told very little about him. We were told that most of the people who work for him do not know his name. So it was very kind of interesting and an interesting way of seeing how things work in those kind of situations. But they built an entire set for us. They themed the entire room. There was a costume contest. They had a buffet that was all Game of Thrones themed. So it was a whole evening. Our show was not supposed to start. Our show was supposed to start at 10, or we were told just be ready. And whenever the client says he's ready, you have to start then.
Yeah.
So we didn't start until after 11. We thought for sure we were going to get canceled. And we were told that after about an hour, he tends to get bored and might just get up and leave.
Mm-hmm.
And that if that happens, most of the audience would probably go with him because they're all his guests.
Right.
So we were prepared at any moment for the entire audience to walk out. Thankfully, they didn't, and the client actually ended up coming backstage to thank us and congratulate all of us, and we were told by his handlers that in the 16 years they'd worked for him, he had never done that before. So it was a really big deal.
Yeah, I have done this gig 3 times before, and when you are on your way there, everybody makes jokes about, like, well, don't get... like murdered while you're out there.
Right.
There's just, it's Maybe this is something that happens when you really touch the upper echelons of wealth in the world, but there's a lot of vagueness.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of, not even like secrecy, but like
ambiguity,
but like, you don't need to know this. So yeah. We're not going to tell you. So your brain kind of fills in like it, like you probably felt this too. Like we felt like it was like, this isn't even real. Like this is not actually happening until I physically land in the Seychelles.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's the only way, because you just keep expecting at the last moment them to be like, sorry, it's well, actually, you know what? That's how we felt about Sydney.
Right.
Sydney, even to the point that we landed in Sydney, we were like, we're not actually going to be at the Opera House.
Right. And then we walked into the Opera House and we're like, oh crap, we're really doing this.
Really, until we like went to our first tech, we thought we were still going to be going to like Sid's Opera House on the wrong side Sydney's. Of the tracks. Sydney's.
Yeah, well, I mean, you've done this gig in the past, and you had said that there was one time that you went and the client just canceled the show day of, or at the day of your tech.
Yeah.
So we
no, day of.
Okay.
We were at the point where you were at, like, you're at the hotel and you're about to go, like, and in an hour you're going to get on a golf cart
to go to the show.
And they're like, well, he left. He had to leave early.
Yeah.
So
we were fully prepared for that to happen, and we were told after the fact that because we started so late, because the costume contest and everything in the buffet and everything was going on so long, that they were 90% sure they were going to cancel our show.
Mm-hmm.
With us standing backstage, just waiting to go. But thankfully they didn't. And he loved us. He came on stage like screaming and he yelled encore at the end of Push It Out, which I was amazed by. So
you're like, there is no encore.
Yeah. I'm like, no, that's all you're getting for right now, but I'll be back in a robe in a few minutes.
Wait, does that have, which ending did you do for Push It Out?
The Orlando version. You push it out, you push it out,
you
push it out.
So you didn't do the Sydney version.
Right. I did the slide at the end and the yeah.
Because I'm wondering if like, we've seen a lot of shows recently that have that built-in encore where it's like, it ends.
Oh, like the playoff?
There's applause, and then you do it again. And I find it actually really annoying.
Mm.
But that song, you actually could sustain one of those.
Yeah.
But for situations like that.
Yeah.
Just have it in your back pocket.
Just ready to go. So overall, I mean, we stayed 5 days at a beautiful beachfront resort, and it was crazy, and all of our meals were included, which was lovely. Like, we all got up in the morning and went to breakfast together. And I at one point, by like day four, we were so just used to this is our lives now. This is how we live. That I was like, this has got to be what it feels like to be a person who's been put into a home.
Oh.
Like put into a retirement home. Like a wealthy person who's been put into a retirement home. Because like you roll out of bed, you go to a buffet, you see your friends that all have other rooms. You sit together, you eat, you talk. Then you're like, okay, I'm going to go take a nap, or you go play like shuffleboard, or you go in the pool, or you play as Gabe and Patrick were doing giant chess with like life-size pieces. And then you roll into lunch, you eat with those same people, you roll back out, and then you go to dinner and then you go to sleep. That's pretty much all we did.
Yeah. I feel like it's also a glimpse into like idle mega wealth.
Yeah.
In that I don't like some of the people that will stay at a place like that. Actually, I very much doubt that that resort is the kind of place that people save up for. And they're like, oh, we're going to go there for 2 weeks, but we're middle class or, you know, in England, lower middle class or whatever, like just regular folk. Right. Mm-hmm. I bet a lot of people that stay at that resort kind of have a lifestyle like that most of the year. And I think it is a little glimpse into like the potential of that lifestyle is kind of stifling. Like, I wouldn't really want to live that way.
By day four, I was like, okay, I'm ready to go.
Yeah.
I'm kind of bored. The one thing I will say about the clientele around us, though, because you had said that most of the times you guys had gone, it had been pretty empty.
Yes, because we were in a different part of the calendar.
Right.
Yeah.
The resort seemed pretty full, and I was amazed by how many kids were there. There were a ton of families.
Also, that resort, I think, would be very boring for kids.
That's what I'm saying. Like, first of all, it's 1,000 degrees.
Yeah.
It was so hot. And the humidity, like, I lived in Florida for many, many years.
Yeah.
This humidity was like nothing I had ever experienced before. I was sitting on my back porch, just sitting there, completely drenched to the point that my hands and feet were waterlogging.
They were pruning.
Yeah. Pruning. Just from sitting there.
And also not much for kids to do there.
No. Like, there's the beach, but, like, it's very rocky.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where they would, I never saw anything that happened in that area. I just remember there were like wooden cutouts of turtles and stuff.
Yeah. And we went to the coconut show, which was not the same coconut show that you went
to. Yes, I went to the coconut show 4 years ago, and it was a delight. And apparently this one was horrible.
They like showed you how to open the coconuts and whatnot.
Yeah.
And
I could open a coconut if I needed to. In the wild, I could sustain myself with a coconut.
And for my version of the coconut show, I can make an ashtray. You
would be dead in 48 hours.
I can be shown something that is being used as an ashtray. And I can also hear the song about cleaning your floors with a husk.
By the way, long story short with coconuts, you smash them open. They showed you how to smash them open, but basically you just smash them open. You do try to find a little pointed piece of wood to like cut into it, but
like a little chisel.
But in the end, you're just smashing it open.
Mm. So that was our experience in the Seychelles. It went really well, and we're thrilled, and it was super fun, and the client was super happy, and our producers were super happy, and we were super happy, so it was great.
Yeah, and you just flew 26 hours about directions.
Yeah, that was nuts. The first flight was 16 and a half hours, and then we had a 6-hour, 9-hour, no. 9-hour? 8-hour. 8-hour layover. 8-hour
layover. Eight on the way home, it was 4?
Yeah, so yeah. 8-hour layover, and then another 4-hour flight.
I must say, I'm shocked that you seemingly had zero jet lag coming home.
I was smart. I stayed up all night the night before we left.
But was that on purpose?
Not really, but then
it was a benefit of.
Once we got to like 3 or 4 in the morning, I was like, I'm just going to stay up.
Yeah.
So I kind of midway decided, and then I slept a good portion of that last day there.
Right. Well, it also helps that you were at a place where you could just sleep 4 hours in the middle of the day and like
not feel like I missed anything.
No, because yeah. It was just like that's the lifestyle there.
Yeah. So it worked out really well. I'm sure everyone else is dying because they were super jet lagged when we got back, and I was like, I feel great.
Yeah.
The amount of travel we did to literally do an hour and 15 minute show is insane.
Yeah. You forgot to mention that it was not an hour and 15 minutes.
Yeah, we cut the ending off of the show because the client, the day of the show, they were like, hey, by the way, how long does your show run? And we're like, oh, hour and 15, hour and 20, depending on laughs. And they're like, oh, we need you to cut it down to 55 minutes because the client gets bored after an hour. And we were like, you want us to cut 25 minutes of the show and the show is in 6 hours.
Yeah. And you cut it at a place that a lot of audiences think the show's over anyway.
Yeah. Originally we were like doing all these internal cuts, and we were going to cut Hold the Door. We were going to cut Something's Missing. We were going to cut Invisible, because we'd kind of pieced together from what we'd heard of this gentleman that he likes fast and funny and comedy. Yeah. And so like the ballads maybe weren't going to work. So we were like trying to figure out how to cut stuff. And then his handler was just like, well, why don't you just end it right after the ending that we want, the whole fan fiction section. And cut out all of the George R.R. Martin stuff and all the spoilers, murders at the end of the show.
Yeah.
Which we ended up doing. We changed.
Oh, that means you didn't do the knife.
Yeah, we didn't do any of that. Yeah, I know. The scream.
That's one of my favorite moments.
Yeah. So we literally just changed it to, this is the ending we want, Thrones!
And it
went to blackout. Oh,
you didn't tell me they changed the word to Thrones. Yeah. I was going to say, speaking of hot weather, what part of the year is the hottest? The summer.
Mm.
But I have a better segue. Speaking of shows that I thought had ended early and that I wish had ended at a certain point.
Wish had been canceled at 11.
There was a point in the show that we saw this week where I thought, oh, this is fine. End it now. Remember, I was like, is it over now?
Yeah.
I mean, at one point you said, is it over? Like,
we were 20 minutes in.
Yeah.
We saw Summer, the Donna Summer musical at the Pentagus this week, 2 nights ago. Or was that last night?
What is today?
Thursday.
We saw it 2 nights
ago. There were 3 instances where I thought the show should end right now. And one of them was 20 minutes in because I'd had enough.
You know, one of the things I think about, first of all, at one point last night, you were like, our poor podcast listeners.
Well, yeah. I mean, I apologize because I feel like I don't like anything lately. I feel like I haven't seen anything that I've been really, truly like thrilled by. And I don't know if that's just lack of quality of what we're seeing or if my tastes have changed or...
You like Circa Humans?
I love Circa Humans.
But that also was not a play.
Right. But like, I didn't love Anastasia. I didn't love... Like, there's a lot of things we're seeing. Even The Little Shop, I wasn't thrilled by.
Yeah.
So I feel bad that most of the reviews we're giving are me just like bitching and complaining about the show. But this show was fucking terrible. It was fucking terrible.
I was thinking last night about what our role is on this podcast and what our... Because we're also people that are attempting to be cast in shows.
Right.
And people might hear what we think of them and whatever. But also, I think that, first of all, we're not on a big enough scale where if this podcast is ever to the point that someone, that Des Makanoff is like, I heard you fucking said shit about Summer, so I'm not going to cast you in my fucking...
Which could happen.
In my fucking Third Eye Blind musical that I'm putting together.
My blind melon musical.
Yeah. So that, first of all, that's a different problem. That's a different scale that this podcast is being listened to.
Right.
But also, it does... We do... it's not that we have a duty to on this podcast, but we have a... Like, we want to have some integrity about what we think about theater.
Mm-hmm.
In other... We don't want to necessarily sugarcoat everything.
Right.
How we feel just because we're worried about what people are going to think.
Right.
But, I mean, this show sucked. Like, it's so bad.
There... Yeah. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt. Keep going.
Well, and the thing I thought last night was, like, how many Des Makanoff shows have I seen now? Ain't Too Proud, this. I haven't seen Jersey Boys.
Tommy.
But based on those two, which are, like, two of his more recent works,
mm-hmm.
maybe he wasn't before, but to me, he seems like a hack. Like, this show was arguably more enjoyable than Anastasia, but almost
only because of the music, though.
But almost more reprehensible than Anastasia. And we didn't like Anastasia.
Yeah.
But, like, at least Anastasia was like, well, we tried to make a musical. It wasn't very good, but we at least tried to. And this one was just like, it just felt like you're just cashing in the whole time. It felt so lazy.
It felt incredibly lazy. The book is god awful. The book is really, truly terrible. It's preachy. It panders. Like, there are so many, like, female power jokes or comments in there that are designed specifically to get a "you go, girl" or something out of the audience.
Also, like, just a person pausing to wait for that applause to come in.
Right.
It's just like, just move on. Like,
yeah.
In other words, if there was like a Dixie Carter moment where like thunderous applause happened organically because the line was so good, mm-hmm. but that's not what would happen.
No.
She would say something and then like a little smattering of applause, and then because you're waiting,
then it picks up.
Yes.
Yeah, it's a slow burn.
The book is bad. I would say the interpretations of the songs are not good.
No. Well, I mean, okay. This, I think, also comes from having just too many jukebox musicals now, and too many of them directed by Des Makanoff and choreographed by Sergio. They look the
Trujillo.
Same. Yeah. I'm sorry, we're on a first name basis.
Yeah.
The opening number, or the first big number in this show, I was like, oh, they're just restaging Jersey Boys.
Uh-huh.
It's three women on the right with fake instruments, three women on the left with fake mics, and we're doing basic choreography behind these things and hitting the blasts that the orchestra's playing with my fake instrument, and then there's somebody up front. It was literally the last number of Jersey Boys as the opening number of Summer. And it drove me crazy. There are several projections of like pop art looking colored, brightly colored, like, here's where we are, this is our location. And then I was like, oh, you did exactly that in Jersey Boys. Exactly that.
Was it projections in Jersey Boys?
Yeah.
Oh. Because they did that in Ain't Too Proud, too.
Yeah. There were several moments that it's like paint by numbers. And I made a joke today, actually, because they've just announced that I believe Ephraim Sykes is his name, has been cast as Michael Jackson in the forthcoming Michael Jackson bio musical.
Like a character from like
Bill Sykes
from Oliver. From like To Kill a Mockingbird or something.
Ephraim Sykes. So I believe that's his name. Has been cast as Michael Jackson. And I made a...
In what?
MJ, the Michael Jackson musical that's forthcoming to Broadway.
There was another one, right?
This is that one. They've changed the title.
Oh, okay.
So I made a joke on the Playbill Facebook page posting the article. I can't wait to see which song they can't figure out how to fit into the plot. So a mic just lowers from the ceiling and we see him recording it in the studio. Mm-hmm. Because literally they did that in this. They did it in Ain't Too Proud. They did it in Beautiful. They did it in the Gloria Estefan On Your Feet. They do it in all of them. We're like, oh, well, we can't figure out how to make this work plot-wise. So just have a mic lower from the ceiling and they'll be in the studio recording it. We'll just see how brilliant they are.
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, but also the thing that drives me crazy about these musicals.
I'm trying to think of which one it'll be for Michael
Jackson. A lot of things drive me crazy. Yeah, right? One thing that really bothers me about these shows, and I understand fully that an actor wants to put their own stamp on things and an actor wants to interpret things the same way. But if you are showing us in the studio, if you are showing that character
mm-hmm.
in the studio recording it, you better sound like the recording. I don't want to hear you doing riffs that aren't true. Yeah, I don't want to hear you licking and doing all these other embellishments that are not on the recording because we're supposed to be watching you record that song that we all know real fucking well.
Well, I think there's been a move away from having any these people sound like the original artists.
I mean, Jessie, I feel like she tried to sound like Carole King.
But the last few that we've seen, I feel like I read somewhere that in the Ain't Too Proud that they didn't really try too hard to did not have them be like sound alike.
They didn't have them dance alike either.
Yeah. Jersey Boys, you kind of have to.
Yeah. I mean, the but Funky Valley sound.
I would say that the three ladies who play Donna Summer at different points in her life in this musical, they didn't seem like they were instructed at all to try to sing like her.
Not really, no. They were all, I will say.
They're great singers.
All three of them had really, really strong voices. I thought Disco Donna, which is the middle one,
yes,
was pretty much overall fantastic.
Oh, yeah.
I liked her performance. She wasn't a bad dancer. She shouldn't kick over her head.
I think they were all great and all... I think the young girl's great. I think the adult Donna was good, but I thought she had a really good moment at the end. So I think they all had their moments.
Yeah.
They're not the problem with this show.
I thought that older Donna, I don't know what she's characterized on as. Adult Donna, we'll call her.
Diva Donna.
Diva Donna, thank you. I thought...
It's Diva Donna, Disco Donna, and Duckling Donna.
Is it Duckling? Is it really Duckling Donna? Are you serious?
It is.
Like, just use it Daughter Donna or something. I thought that... Diva Donna was saddled with the worst writing of anything because she had to be doing like Donna was born in June 1944 Tuesday.
It really did sound like she was reading from a Wikipedia
page.
Yeah.
But also it reminded me again back to that episode of Better Things. You have got to be better than the material to try to elevate it. And she was not.
Yeah.
This woman was not an actress. She was a great singer.
Yeah.
But that's kind of
when she sang, she elevated.
And she really wasn't a dancer.
Yeah.
To the point that it was distracting, I thought.
Is Donna Summer a good dancer?
I don't think so necessarily.
But then also
don't have her dancing.
Well, don't do a dance heavy focus in the show.
Yeah, put her behind a mic most of the time.
Yeah. You were not a fan of the projections, especially because there was like a broken pixel on them.
Oh, well, that's the thing. There was one kind of big video wall across the back, and then these three video squares that would come down,
yes,
and they came down and went back up every song.
Okay, so we saw Anastasia. We talked about that was some of the best projections I had seen. These were not good projections, but I will say there was a very nice effect that they did where they would lower and the image on the screen would pan up, so it looked like you were just kind of imagine the square moving down and the brick wall is just there. You know what I'm talking about? Like it looked like it was going down an actual brick wall. The texture of the brick wall would sort of stay stationary. But that was cool, like, the first two times.
Yeah.
And then not unlike Harry Potter and the Cursed Child, there's some special effects in Harry Potter that are, like, cool the first couple times, and then you're just like, all right.
Then you start, you kind of
look. Then you start thinking about, like, expecting them and also thinking about, like, how do they do this?
And, like you said, there was a pixel.
There was a giant little black square that kept flickering on one.
And there was a couple of discolored pixels in other places too. So it's like if your show's especially projection heavy,
because
there was not much of a set.
Very little set otherwise. Yeah.
It's distracting when you have a giant black square flashing behind you.
I thought it felt cold in general. In a way that I don't like if the show was about what's his name? Thomas Newman? The guy who wrote In Cars.
Oh, I have no idea.
Or like Blinded Me with Science.
Okay.
Or The Buggles. Or like some new wavy, you know.
Devo, the musical.
Yeah, if it's Devo or even like some David Bowie periods or whatever. It felt cold and sleek in a way that
distancing.
Didn't feel Donna Summer-y.
Yeah, I always thought of her as she seemed like a warm person. And yes, the homophobia later on, which is... we'll get to.
Yeah.
But she seemed like an embracing kind of warm, like disco. You never think of disco as cold. You think of it as inviting.
Think of summer in New York City.
Yeah. And you think of 54,
yeah,
which is like, yes, it was exclusionary, but once you were in, and if you're seeing these songs, you're in,
yeah,
you're on drugs and you're having the best time of your life and you're, everyone's a family. And I agree with you. It was a very distancing show. I don't feel like I learned anything new about her. Even
I did learn that. I thought Donna Summer was a stage name, and it wasn't.
It kind of was. Her name's LaDonna.
No, she married a guy named Summer, the German guy.
Oh, right. Summer yeah. was, yeah, you're right. But yeah, I don't feel like we learned anything new. I don't think it was at all insightful. It didn't feel like anyone did any kind of research or work, especially since she's deceased. Like,
oh, I found out that her husband is considered a creative consultant on the show.
Okay.
So that was theorized as potentially a reason why it was so
glossy,
as they say, anodyne.
Yeah. Like even when she talked about her drug use, she only mentioned it like once or twice, like these little blue pills that get you through the day.
Yeah, I'm sure,
like,
she did more.
You're an addict and you were in rehab. Like, show us. Yeah. Like,
it's like, do you remember in Ain't Too Proud? There was a thing where it's like, oh man, everybody in the band's doing drugs, but not me.
Yeah, exactly. I'm the narrator.
Bullshit. You also did drugs too.
Right. I'm the narrator, so I'm the one who's coming out of this clean.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think having her narrate her own story did kind of distance us, and also it glossed over it. Like the homophobia thing was a big, huge thing, and it, like,
well,
technically
first of all,
ended her career for a while.
I was surprised. I was glad that actually that they included it in the show, because I think it's one of the more interesting things to explore
uh-huh.
in the last 25 years around Donna Summer's career.
Mm-hmm.
But they didn't explore it. They just, they didn't dramatize it.
No,
they
just, she told us.
She told us about it, and also told us about it in a way that was like kind of not exonerating in the way that they thought it was.
Right. And it's also a pandering way by having the one gay character that we've met briefly
be like, it's okay.
Come out and like touch his heart like, oh, girl.
Well, like on the way there, I had mentioned the gay thing. So basically the story is that in the 80s.
It was like late 90s.
I thought it was 85 when I looked up the story.
Really?
But at some point, she had, well, why don't you tell them what she said?
She, in the story that she tells from stage, she said that she was at a concert and she was having the boys of the audience or the men in the audience sing against the women in the audience, but that all of the men were singing when they said that for the girls to sing too. And she couldn't hear the women, so she made it. She's like, I made a bad joke. I said, hey, boys, it's Adam and Eve, not Adam and Steve. And apparently that took off, and it was considered homophobic, which obviously it is a homophobic joke, or at least the context that we're normally used to hearing that in is considered highly homophobic and shitty.
1983.
Are you serious?
Yep.
That's crazy. I could have sworn I didn't hear about that until the late 90s.
Well, because she wrote a letter denying it. This is back in like, the main thing is that the internet wasn't around. So sure. Like, this was reported in the Village Voice in 89, or in the Advocate in 89, and it was about a 1983 concert.
Wow.
So think about it. It's 6 years later before it's even reported.
Right.
So it's just not the kind of environment for this, for everybody to hear about it all at once. It's more along the lines of like Carol Channing Corn.
Right. It's an urban legend, and how Lord knows how much it's been altered or yeah. changed or whatever. I wonder if the internet had been around, if this would be a non-issue, because she would have come out immediately and said, that's not what I meant. I apologize.
But here's and it would have been over. On the way to the show, I was like mentioning this thing, and you were like, that turned out to all be fake.
Yeah.
And so in my head, I'm like, oh, she never said it, blah, blah, blah. And in the show, they're like, all, you know, I said, God, it was like Adam and Eve, not God made Adam and Eve, not Adam and Steve. So to me, I'm like, that doesn't exonerate you at all.
No,
it's like that is that conflict, I think, and the fact that it's not, that it's still problematic, and that maybe like it's a more complicated issue than to talk about in two sentences and dismiss.
Right.
And also, potentially something interesting to at least spend like 5 or 10 minutes of your show on, considering nothing much happened in her life and she didn't have many hits beyond the 70s. So that we hit a point in act two where it's just like nothing interesting is happening and none of these songs are good.
Yeah. We went from She Works Hard for the Money to into like a song called Stamp that I'd never heard before.
And she
about
also
her stamping out her breast cancer.
Well, also she became a born again Christian.
Which they
sang a song about it, but like
they didn't say it in so many words though that she was born again.
They didn't explore that either, no. And I think actually that would have led into the gay comments.
Yeah.
Like you could think of like 3 or 4 scenes in a row that might be interesting about that.
Uh-huh.
You could still sing those same songs.
Yeah,
but it was very especially the second act, was very after school, especially.
Yeah, very preachy.
And I'll tell you why I think Des McAnuff is a hack.
Okay.
Because I've never seen before in my life a professional, theoretically Broadway level show that has a laugh track in it.
Oh, I know. That was crazy. I have to say,
that is fucking reprehensible.
I could not believe that.
That is insane to me. So in the opening of the show, Donna Summer addresses theoretically us, the audience, as saying like, welcome to the concert of a lifetime. Mm-hmm. And it's basically like, you're at this sort of like hazy metaphorical concert where she's just going to go through her life. Right.
With two younger versions of herself.
But you are not actually the audience for this concert, because she's saying things like, you know, how are y'all doing up in the balcony? And then there are real people in the audience sort of being like, woo, because they heard her just address the balcony, right?
Right.
There's also a speaker in the back of the house that plays the sound of an audience going like, yeah, woo, woo, woo. Mm-hmm. And like, we were not that far from that speaker.
Mm-hmm.
And it was
very obvious.
It was really jarring and also feels very like you just don't trust your material at all.
Yeah.
To be able to create any of these moments for real.
Mm-hmm.
So you're going to force the idea that we're cheering and clapping for Donna Summer, even though we're not.
Right. I also think that was used for a reason, another reason as well, because that was giving the audience permission.
Yeah.
To then do that from there on.
Yeah. Even though she does say like, you can sing along and all that stuff. And really that audience, even though there was a lot of like, yeah, whatever, that audience at the end of that show was not like the way it was at On Your Feet or The Bodyguard. Two, by comparison, classic shows.
Right. I thought the audience was pretty responsive for this.
No, I mean, they were loud. They were loud in a, they were mostly loud in a like, oh, I know that song way.
No, but I mean the final ovation, like the end. I thought they,
but I'm talking about throughout the show.
Uh-huh.
Like in response to the actual show in terms of like, singing along,
yeah,
or participating. The Bodyguard and On Your Feet, the audiences were way more engaged.
Agreed. Yeah, agreed. This didn't seem like anyone was having a whole lot of fun.
Yeah, they responded at the end. And like I said, I told you, I was very surprised there was not like a mix of the songs for the curtain call.
Yeah, me too.
But that to me is like, those recordings from the back are like trying to get the audience like, to be like, this is like Mamma Mia. This is a party.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody sing along. If you want to get in the aisles and dance, like two ladies danced.
Yeah.
But it felt that show doesn't have the energy to produce that. Like,
right. Mamma Mia, it happened naturally.
What are they going to stand up for in the second act of this show?
They're like, going to get up and do the stamping choreography.
Like the end of the act one end of On Your Feet.
Mm-hmm.
When they were like dancing through the aisles.
Yeah.
They were pulling people up from the, like that felt like, this fun. Show is dumb, but it's fun and this audience is into it. It's like a party, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So this, I did not get that feeling from this show at all.
No. I don't feel like anything ever leapt off the stage. Nothing got to a point where I was like, okay, this is great. Like her moment, Diva Donna, her moment at the piano was great. Just vocally, she's phenomenal. Like she was a great singer.
By the way, there was nothing in that piano.
What do you mean?
I thought about when it came out, I was like, that's a pretty big, heavy set piece.
Mm-hmm.
And the lighting was such that it reflected off of the inside of the cover.
And you could
see that there was no actual piano mechanics inside that piano, which makes sense because like, it's why? Lighter. None of them are actually playing the piano, put a fake one there, but also like maybe don't reflect light into the inside of it so that it looks fake.
Right.
You were saying she had a good moment, but
she had a great moment, but there was nothing that really excited the audience. I don't think like like even the big dance numbers, like when you
nothing
like the choreography was kind of flat. It was all reminiscent of stuff we've already seen before, and it didn't ever get like the blood pumping.
There wasn't even really what I have kind of come to expect from Broadway shows, a number where it's like, okay, this is where we're cranking it out. Everyone in the company that's an acrobat is about to do their stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And they're all going to get 16 bars to do something crazy. And then the audience is going to clap for those people. That didn't happen either.
I mean, if you think about it, think about Soul Train and what was big at the time. There was always the two lines at the end of Soul Train where everybody got to come down and do their feature.
Yeah.
That could have been an incredible moment to have people flipping and doing all their own tricks or all their stuff they want to do. But it, like I was even saying to you after the show, there was very little partner dancing in the show at all either. Mm-hmm. And it was mostly just like, look at me rolling my arms in a circle and let me look. I'm doing the hustle. Look at that. It's
like disco-esque movements.
Right. But so much of what was disco dancing was partner dancing and all the intricate arm movements and spins and whatnot. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And there was none of that until also, that last moment.
It was very dynamic in a way, the real stuff, mm-hmm. where it felt like ballroom dancing on speed, kind of like yeah. whipping people around and like spinning and stuff. And even at the end, I don't think this didn't have the energy of that mm-mm. ever. I don't know, 5 stars out of 100.
I would say there was a moment where I thought, oh, okay, this would be a decent cruise line show.
Yeah, I don't think it was even
if that. You cut it down a bit, like cut.
Oh, so after the piano moment, that's when I was like, just end it here.
Yeah.
There was a whole Studio 54 moment after that, which was kind of unnecessary.
Yeah. But how about the step-in choreography? You like that?
Stepping. Well, I love step choreography, but not when people are not good at it. And also not when it becomes there's a moment in that number that's up there for worst comic relief attempts that we've seen this entire year. Mm-hmm. Worse than that entire number in Anastasia. Mm-hmm. Just like the timing was so slow and off.
Which was?
Where they're... Why were they in the hospital? Because she had breast cancer? Mm-hmm. And then the nurse is like, you got to be quiet. This is the cancer ward. And then the doctor comes in and he's basically like saying it's okay to step because he starts doing it.
Right.
But just wrong in every single way.
Yeah. You liked the suitcase choreography.
I did. There was a suitcase that kept getting pushed on.
As each of her kids left for college.
And it happened when she left for Germany. The same thing had happened earlier. Neat.
So there's somebody who's just...
So whoever is pushing that suitcase on. But then I was thinking you can just weight it in a way that it never tips over.
Right.
So then I was less impressed. Oh. But they hit the same spot every time.
That's what I'm saying. Like the amount of push was
then very... I was thinking like maybe it's like a little on a little cable. You know,
or there's like a little ramp that it goes down and it's just angled enough that it rolls to there. I will say it's worth seeing for the voices. It's worth seeing if you love Donna Summer's music and you want to hear new arrangements or new versions of it sung by really great singers.
I would say if you could get a ticket for
$25,
I would say $30 or less. Mm. I would go if you like Donna Summer's music already. I don't think it will sell anyone on somebody who's indifferent about Donna Summer, which I kind of am.
Yeah. I will say, I mean, there are people who I know who have seen the show who really loved it.
Oh,
who,
I mean, most of the people in the audience loved it.
Yeah.
Also, they're all stupid and they're theater amateurs. The guy behind us kept going like, oh, Last Dance is coming up next. And I wanted to be like, do you know how to whisper? Because he was a person that just has to speak full voice instead of whispering. And also just the like... calling what song comes next is such a like what are you doing? Like,
although I do remember at one point you were like, is this almost over? And I'm like, we haven't heard Last Dance yet, so no.
Yeah.
There was something else I was gonna say. I don't remember.
Well, but. Also because like it's funny because people like that, I don't really care about a show like this, but if it was a show I cared about, someone like that would have heard the experience for me. Mm-hmm. And then I feel bad because I want to laugh through all of the theoretically serious parts when people are like all sad, like when her fucking record producer dies or whatever, and I'm like, I don't give a shit. Like,
we also didn't talk about that,
like
all the men being played by women.
We didn't talk
about that.
Wait, was a guy though? The record producer was an actual. No, I don't. Not George. The record executive. The one who died. That was a guy.
But like she mentions briefly at the beginning of the show, like there's always the men. There's always the men, but all the men were played like it was some sort of like feminist thing about like, I'm not trying to discount it because I think it's an interesting idea, but it's not
clearly executed because the most pivotal male characters are not played by women.
So right.
The guy who ends up being her husband is a man. Her dad is a man.
Her first husband's a man.
Uh-huh. And the record executive is a man. The two producers who are Giorgio Moroder and I forgot what the other guy's name is. Those were women.
Right. A couple of her like roadies were women.
Right.
The gay best friend was a guy.
There was a lot of what's her name in Hedwig feel.
Lena Hall.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or the, I mean, but like, what's the character? Is it Yitzhak? Or
Yitzhak.
Something?
Yeah.
There was a lot of Yitzhak feeling.
Because like they're like there's I mean through all the dance numbers it was, you know, it looked like boy girl, but it, like it's
right.
It's two women dancing together. So like maybe that's why there weren't many lifts. Maybe that's why there wasn't much partner dancing, because we've got mostly women on stage.
Yeah.
But also then when you have the women actually dressed as women, you have these very short women with these gigantic women next to them. And it looks very weird.
That actually was weird.
It looked really weird. I was like, I hated to say it, but I'm like, you're then saddled with these really kind of awkward, tall dancers who weren't very good.
Yeah.
Most of them who all kind of look like dudes, even when they're not in drag.
Uh-huh.
Like, it was just like, why are we doing this?
It was just, I couldn't tell you what the point of that was. I will say it's nice to... I was at one point like, oh, this cast is 2/3 women, so
yeah.
That's good.
Yeah.
So there's just more jobs.
Right.
But it's almost like when the idea doesn't have any, like, meaning behind it, that's...
It feels pandery.
It feels... Yeah. I guess it's not... It doesn't bother me that much. Because, like, I do feel like it's pandery, but I also feel like... I think I care more about more jobs going to underrepresented groups than so.
Sure.
In a way, I'm just kind of like, go for it. But it didn't add much to the show.
That's what I'm saying. I don't mind that they did it.
Yeah.
I just wanted it to make sense and be explained as to why they're doing it.
Yeah. I guess the thing I would counter with is that, like, historically, white dudes get to have the majority of parts in theater in general. And mm-hmm. there's been plenty of times where it's like, why does this make sense? And
sure.
It's never been a question.
Sure.
So I always just think about the Mark Rylance, who is like my favorite actor in the world, coming to Broadway and doing 2 full productions of Shakespeare with completely male casts.
Right.
And it's like, that's really not cool.
But it's the way it was done back in Shakespearean times.
I know. But also in Shakespeare, they didn't pay $300 for a ticket.
Right.
You know, it's just... As cool, like, yeah, as good as those shows were, and they were great, I would give up how good those shows were. Well, that sounds terrible for some women to be in them. That's not what I mean. I would give up whatever esoteric benefit you think you get from that, so-called authenticity. I would give that up for a show reflecting the way our world is now. And which is funny, because then later I saw Richard III with Martin Freeman, with just a regularly cast show. And I was like, oh, these part, like Lady, not Lady, I forget what her name, the character that Richard like hits on at a funeral.
Oh.
That it does feel different when it's a woman playing that part as opposed to a man playing at the idea of a woman.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, this is just to say that like, you know what? The thing in Summer would really piss me off if it was like a bunch of men playing women.
Right.
And it not making sense.
Right.
Because then I'd be like, what the fuck? Now we're just like giving roles to like...
More white guys for no reason.
And also, I guess I don't care that much because the show was bad. So it's just like, it's not like it hurt the show in any real way.
Right.
I think it does maybe point to... I would be surprised if Des McAnuff, who directed it and also wrote part... was one of the 3 writers of the book... I'd be surprised if he could tell you what really lit his fire, creative fire, about wanting to tell this story.
Yeah.
And that having the women play men almost feels like maybe this will be interesting.
I'm bored.
Yeah. Like, yeah. We'll just do it this way. And like, at least this will be something to talk about. Like,
yeah.
You know, or maybe there's some, if there is some link to feminism, I would really have to reach to try to tell you what that point is.
Agreed.
Yeah.
Agreed. And I also think it's kind of funny to have a show being about a woman who the majority of people think she was a homophobe toward the end of her life.
Yeah.
Having the final number be a bunch of women dancing together because they were all dressed as women by the end. So there was a bunch of partner dancing where it was girl and girl dancing together.
And I would also say that if that is a concept you're going for, then you should have the strength of your conviction to have her husband played by a female actor as well.
Yeah.
Like
have it be an all female cast.
Don't like cop out of the concept when important characters have to be in it.
Mm-hmm.
Because the Giorgio Moroder character was nothing. Like he was just,
yeah.
Or whatever. The only like characters that the male characters that had impact on her life were all played by men.
Right. So it's not showing anything about the power dynamic or the power structure or anything if the most powerful people in the show are still played by men.
Yeah. I will say the guy who played her husband had a very nice voice.
He did. They sing, Please Don't Take Your Love Away.
Heaven Knows.
Thank you.
They sang together. And then we looked up afterwards. He actually never sang on it.
So that was a lie. Much like Gloria Estefan's cousin or sister was not in the band or whatever.
So
run out and get your tickets now.
Well, maybe you'll like it. Send us an email.
Yeah.
opencallpodcast@gmail.com.
That's the one.
And we'll be back next time. We're going to check in with one more episode before Eric leaves. We'll be talking about the next show that we saw.
Mm-hmm.
And until then, we'll go see a show.
Bye.
Bye.
Hey guys, it's Eric. One last thing I forgot to say during the podcast. I mentioned to Chris while we went in, boy, I really hope we get the serious dramatic ballad version of She Works Hard for the Money, jokingly, and we frickin' got it. She did a reprise of it, and it was ridiculous. That's all.